I'd like to call on Rabbi Dov Schreier Schlita, who will be speaking about the Shul Kiddush. Is it really kosher?
Besides everything else, I'm also a graduate. I did the Ask OU the first year that it was around, so can be a plug as well. When I was about 17 years old, I used to work in a takeout food place in Brooklyn. On a normal Friday, the takeout place was dropping off anywhere between 20 and 30 kiddushin. The word drop-off has a big connotation when it comes to this concept. What does it mean that the place is dropping off the food? That's where we start with the concept of a Shabbos Kiddush. After about a 15-minute presentation, Rabbi Grossman is now handing out a menu or sample menu for a Shabbos function, Friday night Shabbos. I want to, instead of me telling you what the issues are, I want you to look and see, and you have to really Rashi and Tosfos and every nuance of this menu to see what could be the issue. Why did I put this on the paper? Whether it be boiler issues, whether it be visual issues, whether it be other Shabbos issues, it's very important to look and read a menu for Shabbos. And I want to do that so you can be sensitized to the many issues that come up when dealing with a Shabbos job. Somewhere in your packets, there's a Shabbos guideline to caterers. The first of all the guidelines that we send to our caterers is all deliveries to any shul hotel must arrive an hour to an hour and a half before Shabbos. What's the reason for this? Because anyone who lives in their own home knows what the last half hour before Shabbos involves. Multiply it many times over by a caterer. If you set your standards to a half an hour before Shabbos, you're guaranteeing that food's coming on Shabbos. On the flip side, even when you have these guidelines in place, it doesn't guarantee that it's going to always work out. The biggest test is the month of November. You go from Shabbos starting 6, 7, now Shabbos not Shkia not being till 7:45, and it goes down rapidly. Suddenly you go from the end of October, the first early Shabbos, you get Shkia's at 4:40. No one necessarily has woken up to the fact that everything's got to start 4 hours earlier on Fridays to send out those 25 kiddushim that are going before Shabbos. Amplified by the fact that Rabbi Elephant spoke about how the world is getting smaller and smaller. The Jewish world is getting smaller and smaller. You can be at an event in New Jersey and have a caterer from Borough Park, and you can be in Borough Park and have a caterer from New Jersey. It's not going to matter. The bottom line is people care about price, they care about quality, sometimes they care about kashrus. Depends on the people, depends on the circumstances. And therefore, you're going to find things being sent on Friday, cutting it very close. In fact, I had a maisa about 2 years ago, where any of you who are being involved in kashrus and think that it's not a 25-hour-a-day job, anyone who's involved in food service can relate to the fact that the phone rings. My wife likes to say that even though I'm a rav of a shul, she says, Baruch Hashem for Shabbos. Why? My cell phone can't ring. The phone rings minutes before Shabbos, minutes after Shabbos. And if you're not there to answer the calls, you're guaranteeing that you won't be called the next time. And whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I get a call an hour before Shabbos. Caterer coming from out of state, out of New York, was going to a community in the New York area for a Sheva Brachos. The mashgiach who's waiting for the food to come tells me that the caterer's truck is more than an hour away and it's only 45 minutes to an hour before Shkia. How much leeway do we have past Shkia. Keep going. 25 minutes, one said. Got from someone else, 40 minutes. Lamaisa, the truck, it was a pouring day. The van got stopped 3 times for driving too fast or too slow. After Rabbeinu Tam, truck arrived to the shul after the Zman for Shabbos. Not the end of Shabbos, but the beginning, after, more than 72 minutes after Shkia on Friday night. Obviously, I only found this out after Shabbos. You know, shortly thereafter, we went to Rav Schechter, who wrote a whole tshuva about what to do in the circumstances, but if anyone wants, we can discuss what was done. The Rav of the Shul paskined whatever he paskined in the circumstances, what they could do, what they could rely on, b'shas adchak. But there's a good reason for the first guideline. Going back to my original comment about a drop-off, what does it mean, a drop-off? Our normal guideline for requiring a mashgiach for Shabbos or for any event is if there's any equipment, kelim of a caterer, any management of the caterer, even if it's all paper goods, or any combination thereof requires a mashgiach. So what are the options that's called equipment? So there are many hashgachas that will not call a Shabbos oven equipment. Our guidelines are that even if there's a Shabbos oven, we don't leave Shabbos ovens in shuls for l'oil and void. When they're going to be picked up, who else is going to use them? We don't rely on the fact, even a Shabbos oven is considered kalim for an event. A shul that's ordering from a caterer, kiseder, or the caterer has a kvius in a certain shul, they might have an arrangement where the shul goes ahead and buys a Shabbos oven, or pays them for the Shabbos oven, it stays in the shul, but that's also considered equipment. Something you have to be on top of. Obviously, everyone's trying to cut corners in any which way they can, even though they're not cutting any corners. I was just talking to someone in the audience. We were involved in an event, not a Shabbos event, in an event from a caterer from the East Coast that went to the Midwest to do an event on a Sunday. A chasana, whatever it was. And we're talking about all the stops that these people pulled out. It was obvious that the local community caterer, it was way over his head. He couldn't do it. They imported a caterer from another community to bring it. And he was starting to tell me about the 20-piece band and everything else that took place from the wedding. The people somehow, when it comes to their expense for the wedding, the caterer should spare no expense, except when it comes to hashgacha. Right? When the florist tells them a price for something, okay, that's part of it. When you tell them the price for mashgiach, highway robbery. It's just the facts of the trade, the facts of the game. No matter what you say, no matter how you say, even when you've told the caterer in advance and you put, and very important, whatever you're going to be involved is, Torah Shebichtav is very important. Not being a tzeduki, that we only believe in Torah Shebichtav, but Torah Shebichtav, Yat Torah Shayil Omram Bal Peh, that when it comes to this fact, anything that's Bichtav, they can't be machlish. You send to the caterer something in writing, these are the times, these are zmanim, this is what you have to do. You can't say, Rabbi, I forgot, I didn't hear. Black on white. It's very important too, because after the fact, you have a lot more leverage to point and deal with the facts. But the facts are that kashrus usually takes the side road when it comes to the Bali Simcha. And obviously in business, the bottom line is the dollar. The caterer, as erlich as they come, and I have to emphasize, you know, we don't have to review meisim that have taken place in the community about how erlich people are. When it comes to their own business, when it comes to their own pocket, people are going to cut corners. And it pains me to say sometimes that when it comes to some of the accounts that I deal with and I take care of the restaurants and the caterers, sometimes it's easier to deal with a guy than it is with a yid. With a guy, as long as you respect them, they respect kashrus and they won't do anything against what you're saying. Somehow, Acheinu B'nai Yisrael know better know better than you and make terutzim and all different kuntzim, and they learn one from the other, and it can create issues and a lot of tension when it comes to not only Shabbos but other issues. But when it comes to Shabbos, you have many issues that need to be addressed. The first issue, you have a kiddush for 500 people on a cold winter Shabbos. Everyone's going to want tea or coffee on Shabbos. How are you doing that? If you go into a hotel, or many, many shuls that have put in their own kitchen, they have in there a 3-compartment urn with an automatic feed that every time you take out a cup of hot water, cold water comes in and refills. According to most poskim, that's called bishul. When you take out the cup of hot water and cold water comes in, that's called bishul. Being attuned to the fact that in order for them to have enough water, you have to have enough urns for Shabbos, depending on, again, if you're only doing for 30 people and you have an urn for 100 people, you don't have a problem. But when you're dealing in numbers of 2, 3, 4, 500 people, it's something you have to address before you come to the event. And being sure there's enough tea. The OU policy is we generally, try not to rely on tea scents for a simple reason. The tea bags are very difficult. It's not something that the mashgiach can be sitting there controlling on Shabbos, worrying where the tea bags are going. Tea scents, what happens if you bring, four big containers of tea scents and you run out? So what are they going to do? They have tea bags somewhere hidden back there. And say, oh, Rabbi, you need it in the dining room for a minute. Right, and suddenly we have 3 more containers of tea scents. We generally try and we won't stop a caterer if he has tea scents and they're on top of what's going on, but we try and encourage using only instant tea for Shabbos. Instant tea, it's not a problem with all the Kali Habishu and all the other instant teas already cooked before Shabbos. Cooking on Shabbos, right, there's a Isser of Bishul. How is all the food going to be heated up? And that requires, what we're going to do in a few minutes, to look carefully and understand what is on the menu, how the food is going to be heated up, where the food's coming from, where it's going. Right? And it doesn't require to say, oh, you have a Shabbos job in so-and-so shul, Chaim Beryl, go to the shul. It requires time and effort to realize what it is and what's going on. And no matter how much time and effort you put in to be prepared in advance, expect a curveball. You can spend hours and hours on details. This past Friday, I get a call. The caterer had an event on Sunday in a home in the metropolitan area. The caterer was delivering the food on Friday in order to prevent any issues Matzah Shabbos and Sunday. You deliver it, put it all in a refrigerated truck, no problem, it'll be sealed before Shabbos, wonderful. Problem, the caterer had sent filled racks, rolling racks of food, which was sealed by the mashgiach. But the refrigerated truck, or the refrigerator that they sent, was only a reach-in refrigerator. So we needed a mashgiach to break the seals, right? If it just comes in, the racks are sealed, you don't need a mashgiach to put the stuff in the refrigerator for Shabbos. That's not necessary if the food is properly sealed and signed by the mashgiach. So he needed a mashgiach to come and break the seals of the racks in order to put it in a reach-in refrigerator, each sheet pan, so you had to seal each sheet pan before it went in. 3:30 in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm coming home from work. I get a call on my cell phone from the caterer. After all that effort, the client canceled the job for Sunday. I spent at least 2 hours in the office on Friday, now going ahead and arranging and what. Client canceled the job. There's a question which I've been discussing with the caterer this morning, which is, what do I do with the mashgiach now? The mashgiach got a call an hour after he accepted to do this job from another vad to work for him. So Schar Batala will discuss at a different time. But canceling things out of left field, things you don't expect. No matter how much you prepare, I guess one of the challenges of this position is you always have to be thinking on your feet and thinking ahead, steps ahead, trying to always stay a few steps ahead. In addition, we mentioned borer as being an issue, slotted spoons in the kitchen for Shabbos, whether you have to open packages or not open packages. And I'm going to end this part of the presentation and move on to the menu in a moment. And if someone can give me back one, because I sent them all out. I think it's on the table. One of the biggest issues that people have with a Shabbos event is the people who want to help in their own way. In a restaurant, you have an easy guideline, we'll talk about it tomorrow. In the restaurants, no outside food is allowed in the restaurant. Right? For obvious reasons, yeah, I do get my calls on my cell phone on a Sunday night from a mashgiach. There was a patron in one of the restaurants who asked the mashgiach, asked the waiter to bring out a glass of hot water. And lo and behold, they put their baby bottle, milchik, into the bottle to heat up. What do I do now? Right, even when you try and you try and work it out, you still get the questions to come up. But what happens in many simchas is the bubby baked a cake, and they decided to bring candy for the candy bag. That's a one that all the time is a problem. The bane of any hashgacha's existence. If there's anyone here who does this, I apologize, but the bane of any hashgacha's existence is the thing they call a party planner. Anyone who's ever had to deal with one, knows the difficulty involved. The ones they want everything to be perfect. I was once in a hotel for Shabbos where the party planner had arranged with one of the Goyisha waiters in the hotel Shabbos morning that he should light the candle on all the centerpieces. For Shabbat. Whatever you think, you can't imagine what they're always trying to stay a step ahead, just as we are, trying to figure out. But people are bringing cakes from all over and everywhere, and people well-intentioned, and most people are eating from these cakes. Everyone in their own house would eat it. But if you're establishing a hashgacha, there has to be a criterion by where you accept something or you don't accept something. And therefore, it's important that you have to, there's a form. I don't know if it's in the packet of questions that we have for an event in a hotel, and there's also questions about what do you do for a weekend, and is there anyone bringing candy bags, etc. Is anyone bringing any other items? It's a very important thing for the caterer to ask, and for the Baal Simcha to realize that this is an issue. The final outside food issue is that of mashkin. Right, obviously, many caterers, certainly the smaller caterers, don't have a liquor license to be able to sell wine or schnapps. And obviously, the bottle, which I've never been into a liquor store to buy schnapps myself, so I can't. I'm over 21, but that's not the reason. The price that you're charging versus what the caterer is charging you for that same bottle, is Kirchok Mizrach Mimayrav, what they're going to charge. So they say, instead of me getting the liquor, you bring the liquor. Now they bring the liquor, they bring wine, they bring non-mevushal wine. They bring a flavored liqueur that doesn't have hashgacha. We don't stop them from bringing the wines as long as the mashgiach checks everything. The OU is, in general, accepts many hashgachas based on experience with hashgachas. They have three exceptions. One exception is meat, the second exception is wine, and the third exception is matzah. There they have nothing from outside, nothing that's not OU. Friday afternoon, matzah. The Friday afternoon, getting a call, the Baal Simcha brought three cases of wine. Not OU. We generally don't make exceptions because it just begins the Pandora's box of ending. But it's something that you have to be sensitized to, that you're going to say the Kiddush is coming from here. Where are the pastries coming from? Where's the nash coming from? There are so many other things that you know, that are not in your, that you never even thought about. They sent me the menu, right? Here's the menu, right? The menu is right in front of me. It doesn't say anything about the cake for the Kiddush. It doesn't say anything where the kugels are coming from for the Kiddush, or where the Mediterranean foods are coming for the Kiddush, or where the Sephardi foods are coming. You know, it just says what the menu is. Right? You have to be sure where everything is coming from and be on top of what's going on. Now, for the next 10 or 15 minutes, I want to go through the menu and give the tzibur here an opportunity to point out what the issues are with what is here, and at the end I want to leave some time for questions. So we start with this. Jeffrey and Susan are actually real people. It's not when I started working in the OU, the rabbi I was working for, his secretary was getting married to, whose name was Susan, she was getting married to Jeffrey, and he was preparing for actually to make such a presentation at the Ask OU, and so we made up the menu together with Jeffrey and Susan Shevabrachas. The Ritz-Carlton is not in 1,000 ostentatious place, but it just to prove the point of the wine and the grape juice we just spoke about. Right, where the wine is coming from? Is it mavushal? Is it not? Next, fruit cup. Help. Huh? What's the issue? Huh? That could be one. Right, huh? Bugs could be an issue with. We'll get there with my raspberries and my blackberries at dessert. But carmine is a food coloring from the beetle that could be used in cherries. It's something to be aware of when you have we generally say canned fruit might be acceptable without hashgacha. The exception is if there are cherries in there, because it could be carmine. So you just have to be aware of that. There are also the fruit cup. There are poskim will say you can't boil the fruit out on Shabbos. It has to be done before Shabbos. Yeah? Huh? Right, grape could. Alright, gefilte fish on a bed of lettuce. Obviously, the bed of lettuce has to be checked. Right, horseradish, mayonnaise, dressing. Again, knowing where all these things are coming from. Dressing, it's just very important. You know, it may not be an issue for fish, but it's something to be aware of, that there's a sauce called, you can figure out the pronunciation, Worcestershire sauce, whatever, however it's pronounced, in order to be called, that has to have a component of fish in there. The OU position currently is that if the fish component is batel, it'll be labeled OU parv, but if the fish component is not batel, and there are a few of them that are not, it's labeled OU fish. And if they're using that sauce, and for the chicken, right, you have to be aware of the dressings. Also, a Caesar dressing often has fish in it. I have to be careful that they're not serving it with chicken. That's the dressing. Chicken soup. All right. Huh? Right. One thing, how you keep it warm. Right. Very good. Some dressings are dairy. The soup. All right. How are you putting the soup in? How are you putting the mandolin and the matzo balls and the lakshin? Right, if the soup is hot, right, putting in the soup, then the lakshin. Right, a ladle, you know, the slotted ladle to only get the liquid, shouldn't use that. Barbecue chicken, right, just how it's staying hot, how it's being heated up. Brisket with meat gravy, right, gravy is a very important thing. How are you keeping it warm? But even more importantly, yeah. Huh? Okay. Anyone else? Bishulach har bishul b'davar lach. Right, if they want to have the same gravy in the morning for lunch, you want to be sure that whatever apparatus they're using to heat it, the gravy stays on from before Shabbos for the morning. Now, that one of the guidelines for Shabbos goes as follows. If you have... If meat will be served on Friday night and on Shabbos day using gravy during both meals, two separate gravy pans must be placed on the blech before Shabbos. Although the chevra sitting here know the laws of hachazara, where you can go ahead and you can take the pot off and pour it on, and as long as you're holding it on and daita lahaps and you have all the conditions, that's just a recipe for disaster. Yeah. Well, it depends on the temperature that he leaves it at. Right, if you put it in an oven on warm before Shabbos and it stays there, you know, as long as there's enough water in it and it's not going to evaporate, that's what they'll do. I mean, that's why the Hamon Am doesn't have gravy at lunch, right? Because it's not so pusher to. But again, the people who are planning these simchas, the caterer is not sitting there with the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Bishul open to tell him, "I'm sorry, you can't do that." Right, the caterer just wants to make the sale. And most people who are going to make a simcha have done a little bit of their homework. And if you say that you can't do this, well, your competitor can. And I mentioned it to some of the people I spoke to last week. There's one guideline which is which goes around and is, you know, some poskim rail against it and some are matir. The Bir Halacha writes that Chazar al Yidei Akum would be permissible for varying extenuating circumstances. The OU Poskim don't feel that Chazar al Yidei Akum for a Kiddush on Shabbos is that extenuating circumstance, whatever the Tzorach Mitzvah. Right? So, you know, it's Rabelsky even feels very strongly, at least what he told me, that it's a Michshol waiting to happen. Because the extension that comes from that heter is a caterer that can serve medium rare, well done, and rare meat on Shabbos. On menus, friends of mine have been to this catering serving steak, you know, filet mignon, whatever the fancy steak is, on Shabbos with these options. Last time I checked, it had to, according to everyone, it has to be in Vushul called Tzarko, even according to the to that opinion. So that's where the gravy comes in. Yeah. Yeah. Solutions? Sure. No problem. All right. So which one do you have a question on? The soup. So the soup is just a matter of making sure he's taking it off before and that they put the that if they're going to give noodles, maybe it's better that the noodles be on the table and everyone could put it in because it's already a klishlishi at the worst, or klisheni, as opposed to, or that you know, the order of the process is that the soup goes in first and then the croutons. The croutons generally, at least the old fashioned, you know, now you go in the aisle to buying croutons for Shabbos, you have 37 different styles. But the old-fashioned little mini yellow mandolin that are deep fried, which according to most poskim is considered like bishul, so you can even put it in. It's not called cooking, but you know, dipping your challah in the soup. You have to ask your local posek about that question. We can't get involved with the consumer dipping. You can imagine a mashgiach. You know, excuse me, you can't dip that. You don't want to get into that. The potato kugel and the carrot simis is again just an issue of how it's being cooked. Right, on all tables, challah rolls. Where are the challah rolls from? Right, you know, you see it on the menu, but you don't, like, who's the caterer is not necessarily a baker. Right, you have to know where he gets all his stuff from, and to be sure that he's getting his stuff from there. The coleslaw can have a tolaim issue. Make sure that the cabbage is checked. Cucumber salad, pickles, soda, ice. Right, ice. Just want to train your caterers to put a little water at the bottom of the bowl before they put the ice in. Right? The ice that melts into a bowl is nolad and muktza, and then become, if it melts into a liquid, it's mashke abolatoch mashke. That would be permissible. So you put a little water in the bottom before it melts. One Friday, I get a call. I got a call from Rabbi Perlmutter, who was supposed to speak. His caterer is doing a bar mitzvah, and he notices the cake that came has a beautiful inscription on the cake, Mazel Tov Chaim, on your bar mitzvah. What's he supposed to do now? So, you'll meet Rav Schechter on Friday. Some of you had the weren't in YU and had the distinction of meeting him. Rabbi Schechter wrote one of the most beautiful tshuvas that I've ever seen. He writes, you know, the question, a person came and he brought, and he wanted to have this cake with the name, and by mistake they wrote it on, and he said, even though the Rama writes it's a chumrah not to use it, we shouldn't do it, but what you should do is, in order to enhance the persume nisa of everyone seeing the cake, you put it out there in front of, he writes this in Hebrew, you put it out there in front of it for everyone to see, and they take it into the kitchen to have the guy cut it. Right. I was saying, but the way he wrote it, you know, that you put it, the cake out with persume nisa, right, so you have to be sensitized to, you know, most of the local bakeries today, at least in the areas, know to put it on a cookie or something, take off the cookie before they cut the cake. But it's something to be aware of. Coffee, tea, we spoke about the instant tea and other issues. Wedges of lemon, different poskim, if people are going to squeeze it in, some say you should use lemon, you should put lemon juice to avoid that issue. Depends what you do. Sugar. Many people have tried to open the sugar packets and with some modicum of success and sweet and low. The problem with forcing them to bring the loose sugar is waste. Right? Because once they put it on the table, not in some type of container, right, they can't take it back. The package containers. So it's not so simple to just say you can't use it. Opening the soda bottles, you know, there are some poskim say yes, some poskim say no. You know, I think generally they just have, you know, there are some hashgachas which will require. We generally don't require them to open it, but you know, if they ask, you know, they're always goyim around to open it. The next Shabbos lunch, right? Whipped cream. Whether you're allowed to use, you know, you to use the spray from the whipped cream on Shabbos.
Make sure it's parv.
Right. Make sure it's parv. Very good.
Lemon.
Huh? Right. Right, cutting the lemons. That's, you know, we'll talk a little bit about tomorrow when we talk about catering, you know, in the restaurants. You know, when caterers go to a hotel, one of the things that they do when they go to check the bar is they bring a knife and a cutting board for the bartender to cut the lemons and the limes. Huh? Most people aren't eating the lemon, they're squeezing the juice of the lemon, they're not. Right, the knife that they're bringing is a parva knife. Yeah? Right, but again, we can't assume that we're dealing with Talmidei Chachamim here. Right? Here we might be able to, but you can't assume that the people at the event are you squeeze it onto the sugar and then you bring, no. Just like you can squeeze the lemon onto your fish. Huh? According to some poskim, you're not. It's a, you're. It's changing a state. Huh? Sweet and low. What's the problem with it? Opening the packets. That would be the question. All right, the gefilte fish and chopped liver. You want to make sure the fish and the liver are separate. All right, tossed salad. All right, romaine lettuce, raspberries. All right. Obviously, we're dealing with our talaim issues. We're just trying to expedite the matters. You just have to be aware what's, you know, you see a tossed salad. What's in the salad? Where's the salad coming from? Is it being checked? Is it stuffed cabbage with gravy? There's our gravy question. Cold cuts, right? Where are they from? Are they, you know, were they there before Shabbos? Brisket with gravy, again, comes our gravy, our chalent. Right, where was the cholent before Shabbos? How is it being heated up? You know, I spent many summers in camp where, you know, Friday night cholent was a very big scene. Right, how, you know, so there were people who were in charge of holding the pot while it was off the blech, you know, so they could take it off. So, just making sure, yeah.
I thought the cholent caterers
One of the things, I'll close with... I'll come back to you at the closing because that's really, really the essence of what I want to talk about. The potato kugel, auction kugel again is just where it's coming from, right? Ice cream, the dessert, the same thing. Ice cream, make sure it's parv. birthday cake, happy birthday mom, the same issue. The tea is the same issue. Then if you have a shalashudis, right, you have to be careful. Is there enough? Did I want to put cream cheese on the table? You know, on our November Shabbos, you're not putting cream cheese on the table, but in your July Shabbos, you might be, you know, depending on the timing, whether they're allowed to be. And as a hashgacha, it's important that as a hashgacha, right, your job is not to be machshel sarabim. If there's someone who is a Yeki, Dutch, or whatever, you can't be catering to that policy. You can't be catering to the one or two people who are keeping this. Right? Maybe if you're in Kaladasi Shurun for Shabbos, you can rely on that 3 hours. But if you're in a place where everyone's keeping 6 hours, but there are two or three people who are keeping, you can't put on the table for the person who doesn't realize what they're doing. Very often, especially in a hotel, they come by Shalashudas, they come to ask for what you want, what, you know, come for milk, especially for the children. The Mashgiach will be accommodating, but generally the milk will not open. The refrigerator where the milk is will not open until 6 hours after the meat was served. All right, the platters, you know, making the platters on Shabbos, not making them on Shabbos, milk, orange juice, just all those things are very important. I want to close my remarks, and the last question is that he asked a very, very fundamental question. I said before that the caterer's bottom line is keeping the Baal Simcha happy. What happens on Shabbos morning? As a matter of fact, I got a call this morning from a mashgiach who was with a caterer for Shabbos. Shabbos morning, you come into the room, and lo and behold, the janitor of the shul decided to be nice to you and unplugged your Shabbos oven. Right? Janitor was being nice to you, or you want to be. The shul just put in an elaborate Shabbos clock system, and they forgot not to arm the outlets that are for the caterers. You come in, and now you see the food. If the caterer beats you, right, and that's Derech Eretz Kadmah LaTorah, whatever you're going to do, you have to emphasize to your mashgichim, coming on time is the most important thing, and even coming early. The caterer beats you, you can be guaranteed that somehow the Shabbos oven is back on. Guaranteed. The question now becomes, put yourself in the position of the Baal Simcha. When the caterer comes to tell you that, I'm sorry, the only thing I can serve today are cold cuts and cold chicken, what's going to be your reaction? Are you going to, I'm not paying you for the Kiddush? Or are you going to give the guy a Yashar Koyach for being Erlich? Right? What's the Baal Simcha going to do in that circumstance? Put yourself in that position, your bar mitzvah, your first child being bar mitzvah, being bas mitzvah, whatever you're doing, you're making a simcha on Shabbos, and lo and behold, the caterer comes to you and says, I'm sorry, we don't have challah at the Kiddush. What's going to be your reaction? Not going to be happy. If you're gonna go ahead and give the you know, get up and say b'fnei am ve'eda, I want to give the caterer a big yashar koyach for being erlich and honest and telling me this, it'll be a big tikkun in Kol Yisrael. Because if you give the caterer credit for being erlich and being honest, then the pressure that the caterer feels, despite the fact, you know, that you get the credit, you're still gonna have to give him a credit back. But you get the credit for being erlich and honest and not losing the client and losing your next simcha because it wasn't your fault, will go a long way in enhancing whether the Shabbos Kiddush in the shul is kosher or not. And with this, I want to close my remarks. I'll get open for questions and I'll stay for a little bit if people want to ask more questions. But the most important thing is to be on top of what's going on, to be aware of what's going on. And if anyone came in here this morning or this afternoon thinking that there's very little involved in supervising a Shabbos Kiddush, I hope I've dispelled that notion. At this point, if anyone has any questions, bevakasha.
Do you work for the Baal Simcha, the shul, or the caterer?
Caterer. We generally... I remember when I did the first Ask OU, the same question was asked to Rabbi Eisen, who's going to speak later, and he said, if I sat in on every meeting with a Baal Simcha, I would never do anything else with my time, because you know the caterer, the Baal Simcha, you sometimes you meet with a caterer and you're talking to him, you hear so and so's on the phone, you say, you know, I had to meet with this lady 47 times before their Simcha. This, that, every day changing it. Just aim it over yourself. Certainly the case. Yeah.
What about the general refrigerators? There's some that they enclose, there's the fan, and
they have refrigerators like that?
The
freezers. Ah. Well, first of all, segregation by a goy may be mutter in that circus, but I think you know that generally the lights of the refrigerator is in anyone's home. You know, the first Shabbos you're living in a house and you're living in a place, it's inevitable that it's going to happen. You know, I'm living in my house, first time we're having company, I knew I had challah rolls in the freezer, no problem. You know, we'll take them out in the morning. I come home from shul, my wife tells me, oh, by the way, the light's on in the freezer, I can't get the challah rolls out. Obviously, Motzei Shabbos, the light came out and it's never gone back in. But that's something you have to be aware of when you're taking care of.
Also,
Amir al-Akum is a is the caterer's best friend, and it's something you have to be aware of. Because the stretching of what's permissible has gone so far that you have to pull it back in. Sure. Depends on the circumstances, but given the volatility of the catering industry, the OU dictates what he's paid. With one caterer, he has actually an account with the OU that he keeps ahead of and he pays, but generally the caterer pays. Right. The issue is that because of just the processing and the size of the OU, the mashgiach would lose in the time of processing to ensure that the OU collected what was owed, and in order to pay. And given the fact that, you know, in the last month one caterer merged with another caterer, it's now an OU, you can find yourself in those circumstances with a serious financial hit. If a caterer does leave Hashgacha, there is a clear cut understanding among the Hashgachos that they won't take over Hashgacha until all financial matters are addressed. No. You go to the. They did it in the oven, in the hot box, or in.
It was on the fire. They added. Okay.
What I would say is you call over the Maradasar. The Rav of the shul. You don't need to be the bad guy. You're there trying to help them, and you're obviously you got to stop it, but you have to do it in a the Baal Simcha didn't do it, right? So the Baal Simcha shouldn't be blamed for what the caterer did, even though it's the Baal Simcha's fault that they told them 200 and there are 500 people, that whatever the case might be. But you have to go to the Rav of the Shul, and the Rav of the Shul has to, with his Chachma, do what's proper in that situation. And certainly after Shabbos, you let the Hashgacha know what happened. You just speak up, I can't hear.
Stand up.
I can't hear. Yeah. Without Hashgacha. No, absolutely not. Carte blanche. With what? The OU's position is that obviously l'chatchila, and b'di'evad, it shouldn't happen. If it happens, I think the poskim wrote 25 minutes after Shkia, you could rely on a guy taking everything out and relying on this heter of chazar al yidei akum for the purpose of a shev brachah that would have no food under those. Yeah. Actually, Rabbi Shechta held 25 minutes. I think Rabelski held 40 minutes. Why? I don't hear.
I think you have to stand up.
I think everyone else has to stay quiet. He's speaking louder. Right? They don't have. They don't have a place in the kitchen. So now. Right. Well, you're talking about for shalosh shudas or something. So what generally will happen is they'll use paper to produce tuna or salads that are not involved in hot. And no, it doesn't usually happen that a caterer who doesn't have any apparatus for milchiks is doing milchiks. And if he does, he's getting everything cold and it's being done outside the kitchen and it's not being done by him. Yeah. Our guidelines for Shabbos, I just sent this to the caterer, is the Mashgiach's fee begins 2 hours before Shabbos. Right, his job, if he's working a Shabbos job, he's getting paid for 2 hours before Shabbos also. Right. Generally, we have a fee for Shabbos. I don't know what your situation. You got to talk your personal situation to someone. No, you have to talk your personal situation. I'm a little aware of a personal. Talk to maybe it's going to work out within the situation. But that's how we generally have for Shabbos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mashgiach usually brings his own lock for the refrigerator, or he seals everything that's in the refrigerator that's not used Friday night is sealed up or locked up. Huh? What about the kelim? That's a good question. It's not locked up, but it's generally there. Most of the kelim that they're not using are also sealed in saran wrap. It's not just left open. Huh? I would hope that any janitor that's hired in a shul has been told by the rav of the shul that he's not allowed to put anything in any ovens without rishus and without And in many shuls, I was involved with a couple of shuls who they asked me to write guidelines for their whatchamacallit, for their kitchen. I said, your kitchen has to be locked. The janitor can't be in without the Shomer Shabbos in the shul and someone checking up on it. Some resemblance of understanding of what kashrus is, yeah. There's a question b'chalal in the poskim. I'm not getting into this discussion about whether bishul in a microwave is really bishul. Yeah. Any other question?
Okay. Very good. Shkai from Dice.